fascism.
You are listening to Race and Nation on Radio Aryan.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curves, yeah, flattening the hills. Someday the mountain might get them, but the law never will. Making their way the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow.
It is August 29th, 2017, and you are listening to Race and Nation on RadioAryan.com. This is your Lordship, Lord of the Northern Realm, Lord Goyhammer. And with me, as always, my comrade in the trenches and brother in fight, Sir Stephen Lanzer. Also tonight with us, and rumor has it, he's a ruggedly handsome fellow. He's the Jarl of the Shield Wall Network, and he's building one of his bridges right over our trench to engage in a little network fellowship. Mr. Billy Roper, you have been directly over target catching enemy flak for a while. I and Sir Lanzer Boy are humbled to be your support fighters as an escort tonight. Welcome to Race and Nation, comrade.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'm just honored to have an opportunity to be on Race and Nation with you this evening, and I've been a fan of your program since I first heard the first broadcast. I know that you guys and I are both what those who are corrupt call purity snarlers. I'm 100% on the same page with you there, and I really respect the work that you do for our people. So I'm just honored to be here with you.
I just got done listening to your current cast because you spoke about exactly what I wanted to hear, which was about some of the fallout that you've been receiving ever since the whole Charlottesville thing. And I don't want you to totally rehash what you've been going through, but I mean, some of the issues that you've been brought to a head have been really astounding, especially, you know, the death threats and the act, you know, the threats of physical violence. I mean, I know I would assume you would do this already, but I hope you are taking some kind of preventative measures if and when you go out in public, or you know, you're out with your family. Because around here, I mean, me and LG, we don't even leave the house unless we're pretty much concealed carrying pretty much 100% of the time, and but we don't have active death threats against us either. So how is the family weighing all that? Is that just usual business for you guys down there, or is it really hot right now?
Well, I'm not trying to use hyperbole to exaggerate the normal threat that we go through. I've been a public activist for our people for most of my life and have typically faced threats, but you know, it comes in peaks and surges. Mm-hmm. There are lulls and then it gets more intense as things happen, sometimes related to things that I've done. And in the case of this most recent episode, things that I have not done, even if I do happen to bear resemblance to someone who was there. But yeah, you know, we have faced death threats and threats against my wife and against my family over the last couple of weeks, since Charlottesville especially. And the only way that you can respond to that really is just to, like with doxing, make them very clear on the fact that you're fearless, that you have nothing to lose and that you are more ruthless than they are. That if it comes down to it, you're willing to kill or die for your people and for your beliefs, because most of them are not. So far, knock on wood, none of them have been, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, I do absolutely use my Second Amendment rights. What I've been doing is just starting to carry more magazines, because I'm not going to go down easy, you know?
No, I totally agree with that. Go ahead, Goy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, real quick. I specifically remember, and I'm not on Twitter social networking too much, but when I do go on there, only because I follow only so few, I usually see everybody's comments and stuff like that. And particularly during that time, sometime last week, I did notice, and it's a little uneasy, especially when it's our own people who are unhinged and, you know, threatening you, a family man who is, you know, who've committed no crimes. You've not threatened anybody. And I think he was some sort of veteran, or was he an Oath Keeper or something? Do you know what I'm talking about? I specifically.
Exactly. So there are all kinds of niggers on the Twitter feed. On coming on my Twitter feed, like you said, I wasn't trying to troll them. They're coming on my Twitter feed,
yep,
and literally saying that they're going to rape my wife and kill my family and to get me fired, which, you know, good luck with that. But they're trying to attack Amazon, asking them to take my books off Amazon.com, which is how you attack an author's source of income and revenue. Their yep. closest thing they can do to fire me, and downvoting the books and, you know, putting fake reviews on them. And then this, yeah, the Oath Keeper type guy came on and literally said that he was going to come to Arkansas, and then I challenged him. I said, do you want directions? You know, really? I don't really care.
Yeah, you did.
And then he started saying, well, I'm not going to come, but I'm going to send. He was like a former SEAL, or trying to pretend like he was.
Oh, boy.
You know, so basically, our enemies only win when we are intimidated. Our enemies only win when they can. That's what doxing is all about, is mm-hmm. trying to intimidate someone into silence, trying to bully someone into shutting up and sitting down. And I've never been very good at shutting up and sitting down, especially when somebody tries to threaten me. So, yeah, I just basically told him if he wanted directions, I'd give him. And the next thing you know, my Twitter's suspended. And they've been playing reindeer games with me since then, like a lot of people. Social media platforms have been shutting down for a lot of us. And I really, though, honestly, cannot complain. I'm not going to sit here and whine or kvetch about it, because guys realistically have lost their families, lost their homes, lost their jobs in Charlottesville. And so they have lost more realistically than I have, you know, in the real world. But that being said, I hope that we all understand, those who've lost a little and those who've lost a lot and those who haven't lost anything yet, all need to understand that our enemies, the Jews, really want to make us all extinct. They want all of our grandkids to be mulattoes or faggots. And on the way to extinction, we're probably going to lose some social media platforms. You know, on the way to our grandkids being mulattoes, we're probably going to get fired from a job or two.
Yeah.
So that's the least of our worries. I know it seems big right now, but, you know, not to go all constitutionalist on you, but if you look at what the guys who wrote the Declaration and signed it, you know, the 56 guys who signed the Declaration of Independence, they all suffered a lot during the Revolution. Most of them ended up broke, in prison, or dead, lost their families, lost everything. You know, now they're heroes. And I think that all of us who weather the storm, who are not fair weather patriots, will be in the future as well.
Yeah, it's funny that you mention our founding fathers and how, you know, they're basically, you know, insurgents, if you will, you know, back in the day. And the founding fathers would have been obviously lost the effort and lost the war, been hung as traitors, and their history would have been, you know, tainted as rogue, you know, because, you know, nobody asked the victors in history if they're lying. And that gentleman was Commander Rockwell, who actually died today 50 years ago in 1967. So I've been broadcasting various Rockwell speeches and platforms in a show that we actually did on Commander Rockwell. I think it was like show number 4 right out of the gate. We're already dipping into some history. So I wanted just to say real quick that, you know, we all do remember Commander Rockwell. He did die today, August 25th, 2017, 50 years ago.
And let's not just gloss that over. I'm glad that you brought that up. The first thing I did this morning was to write an article on the Roper Report blog about him, because I honestly have tried to, throughout my career as a public white nationalist, emulate him in an updated form. I also, like he did, use the radical flank effect. I really believe that by purposefully being extreme, you create wiggle room to your left for people to say, basically ostensibly the same thing that you are in a slightly more palatable and moderate form. And so by being the radical flank effect, taking that extreme right wing, you also move the Overton window of the dialectic discussion further to the right and drag some people along with you just a little bit on your left. That's what he did, through theater, through political theater, through street action. I mean, like hiring a guy in a gorilla suit to troll Martin Luther King, that was great. But yeah, George Lincoln Rockwell is a great idol. And I mentored under Dr. William Luther Pierce, who mentored under George Lincoln Rockwell. So kind of in a indirect secondary osmosis form, I learned a lot about him. And I actually, Dr. Pierce gave to me before he passed George Lincoln Rockwell's copy of Mein Kampf. And so it's on the top of my bookshelf. I'm looking at it right now. It's like a 1966 cloth-bound cover that he, for some reason, took like a straight razor and cut out lines and quotes out of the pages. So it's all hacked up.
Oh, man.
But it's George Lincoln Rockwell's Mein Kampf. It is one of my prized possessions. But all respect to him. Yeah, you're right. 50 years ago tonight. Now, not to be a black pill, but all of us know that he was not assassinated by Antifa.
No.
Or by New Black Panther Party.
No.
He was assassinated by one of his own guys, gone rogue. So when we talk about infighting being bad today, it could be a lot worse.
It could be a lot worse, but it's definitely still there, and it's not doing us any good. I mean, on smaller levels, there's still a lot of that crap going on. Also, another thing you mentioned on your cast, and I've been already saying for a while, too, and I've been noticing, and we had a gentleman who goes by the handle Vandrosco. He would come on. We talked about how the Jews don't care anymore. We've poked them so much, especially as of late, that they're coming at us at all fronts, just like you said, by the doxing and social media platforms and all that. But even when I was growing up as a kid and like the skin movement in the like late 80s, early 90s, like the Jewish like presence was way more like in the shadows. And now they're just getting so high on their own power at this point. They just don't give a damn. No, they don't care. They're just blatant. And
Their word for it is they have a special sweet little Yiddish word for it. They call it kutzpah.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, you're absolutely right, man. Because if you watch old movies like from the 30s and 40s, you'll see that Jews used to anglicize their names to make them sound less Jewish. Stein turned to stone, that kind of thing. Try to blend in. Now they don't even bother. Now they don't even try. They don't feel like they have to. But over and over again throughout history, they have gotten so arrogant, so full of hubris and pride, so cocky, so what they call full of chutzpah, that they overreached time and time again. 109 times in European history, they've been kicked out of every European country they ever parasitically infested, 109 times and counting. And that was before we had mass communication, mass transportation, where you can't actually get kicked out of one European country anymore without it reverberating all over the world. We're all connected. And so this time, they may overreach. This time, the backlash may very well just finish the job.
Yeah, I agree.
We wish.
That would be nice. Let's be 110, shall we? That'd be great.
Oh yeah.
to go back to just a second to the guy you were confused to, you who you're mistaken for. Do you know this gentleman, and B, did you reach out to him on a personal level once the shit kind of hit the fan, if you will?
No, I don't know him, and I have not spoken with him. His name was Dodson. Apparently, he was from the Northeast and came down to the University of Arkansas just for a couple of years for their graduate engineering program and then moved back or something like that. He's been giving interviews now to the Arkansas Times and to a couple of other media outlets, so I don't have any problem speaking about him since he's actually contacted them and got on the record. Right. And to be frank, he kind of cucked out a little bit. But what I did when I got contacted, me and a Professor Quinn at U of A both got accused of being this guy that was in Charlottesville, the Tiki Torch March, and it was like a mosquito holocaust, it was like a Citronelle uprising, which was a beautiful thing, I guess, and probably still have black smears all over people's makeup. But anyway, it is what it is. And so I got accused of being this guy, and so did Professor Quinn. And I was like alternately saying, yeah, it was me, and then no, it wasn't me, because I wanted to muddy the waters and confuse them, because I didn't know who this guy was. I really didn't. I didn't know why the heck anybody would wear an identifying shirt.
At a yeah, right. Like that was, yeah.
But my thing was, I thought he's probably a new guy. And I thought, you know, I can take it. I've been on the front lines for 30 years. Don't really care. What are they going to do? They're going to dox me. You know, but this new guy, I didn't want him to lose his, you know, family, job, whatever. So I figured I can buy him some time to maybe do whatever he can do to cover his tracks, to bury the shirt, to you know, shave his beard, get a new hairstyle, whatever. But I wanted to buy him some time. And I thought about 24 hours of confusion where a lot of them were thinking it was me or it wasn't me or blaming this Quinn professor. But my whole purpose was to try to confuse all the Antifa and thinking that it was either me or this professor, and knowing that he'd be cleared eventually, and knowing that I didn't really care, I figured that the whoever it was might be able to cover his tracks. He ended up coming out, but I was just trying the best I could to provide a little cover for a new guy that, you know, probably didn't know what he was getting himself into.
Well, yeah, that was a nice touch, though, to kind of run interference for him. I mean, you didn't even know the guy. You didn't have to. There's nothing wrong with that.
When he was cucking out, though, was he like eminently denying that he was you? He was like, I'm not Billy Roper. I'm not Billy Roper.
Well, he apologized to the professor. I think on times he apologized to the professor who got confused with being him. But they mentioned me in that article. You know, I've gotten a lot. I've gotten actually more media over the last week than I would have gotten if I'd actually gone to Charlottesville. I've sold more books than I would have sold if I'd gone to Charlottesville and given the keynote address, you know, standing on Richard Spencer's shoulders. It's crazy. But it's all because of this guy who wore an Arkansas Engineering shirt that kind of looked a little bit like me. That's, from my perspective, has to be God. I don't know. But really strange way it worked out. He did not name me, but the media articles all have, because I did something kind of funny. I was just trolling them back that this last weekend, we've been doing a lot of local activism as the Defense of the Confederate Monuments heats up, also here in Arkansas. We did 3 Confederate Monument defense rallies just last weekend, kind of spread us thin, having to divide up the Showall Network among 3 different places simultaneously. But we did it, we covered it, and they're still up. Made a lot of good contacts that way. But I had, as soon as this hit, and I started getting a lot of smoke from it, I ordered an Arkansas Engineering shirt from the UFA.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. It was good.
So I started wearing it publicly, and I wore it to all these public protests and rallies. And that's the media were like, oh, that's you, that's you, that's you. Take a picture. Oh, that's you. You're him. You're him. So, no, I wasn't there. There I am in the shirt. You know?
Oh, so, shit. That's good just stuff, to play man. With them. Well, yeah, you have to. I mean, seriously, I mean, Confederate monument thing is getting completely out of control. I've even read reports now that they're digging up old grave sites and kicking over stones and doing all kinds of horrendous shit. But on the somewhat lighter side, I was wanting to know if you had an opinion or any kind of comment on the Alan Armentrout guy, the gentleman who was dressed in a Confederate uniform, who was surrounded by protesters, and people were going right up to him and giving the finger. And yeah, I guess he had an AR strapped to his back. I tried tracking this gentleman down. He's not very easy to find. I'm also really crappy at seeking people out on social media. So I did try to seek this Mr. Armentrout out to see if I could get a story directly from him, because all the stories I've heard about this guy have been, he said this or he said that, and I don't believe anything the media says. I wanted to get, you know, directly, I wanted to get the information directly from him. And I was actually even on the chat over at Radio Arian today, and I was talking to Zen on it, and he was asking questions about it. We were going back and forth, and I'm like, I really would like to track this guy down, but I figure since I had, you know, you on the show tonight, and, you know, you're obviously our support down in the South right now. Do you have any thoughts on Alan Armentrout and any view on that whatsoever?
Absolutely. First, let me preface that by saying that I understand that for people who don't live in the former Confederate states, that's kind of an indirect issue. But let me reassure you that it's kind of like a reversal of what that Reverend Neiman Muller said about, you know, first they came for the Confederate statues, and I wasn't the redneck, so I didn't care. You know, they're not going to stop there. I promise you, they're coming for Thomas Jefferson next. They're coming for George Washington after that. All the founding fathers of the United States were white nationalists. And you can read the Naturalization Act of 1790 when they said specifically that only white people could immigrate to the United States and be citizens, and they doubled down 5 years later. Naturalization Act of 1795, where they said you had to be a white person of good moral character to immigrate and become a citizen of the U.S. They said they're establishing the government to secure the blessings of liberty for themselves and their offspring, not the offspring of Asia or Africa or Mexico. So all the founding fathers, you read what Thomas Jefferson had to say, were white nationalists. Right. So they're all coming down next. They're going to sandblast Mount Rushmore. It's not just about Confederate monuments. You may not like Robert E. Lee, but if you like Thomas Jefferson, you're going to lose him too. So that having been said, to make sure that everyone understands this is not really a regional issue, this is a racial issue. I don't know the guy who was at that monument. I did see the video of it, and I can tell you, you know, the three of us have been through some stuff. We've practiced improving our self-discipline and our restraint, obviously, or we still wouldn't be free.
Exactly.
But that kid, though, I'm calling him a kid because he's about half my age, you know,
right.
That kid to stand there with those thoughts, whatever they are, screaming and flipping him off and cursing him, yeah. If I'd been standing there, probably the cop would have come a little bit sooner and wouldn't have been quite so nice to me when he got there.
Exactly. You know?
There have been a mess to clean up. So I really respect his restraint and his self-discipline. But then, you know, the fact that he went to a Christian college, which then kicked him out.
Yeah.
For standing there, he did not break any laws. He did not even say anything politically incorrect. He didn't say anything at all.
Right.
No one could have been possibly offended by anything that he did. I mean, I guess, obviously, they can fire anyone if they're a private business, and you can kick anyone out of a private college. But that doesn't make it right. And if I knew the guy, I'd certainly be trying to help him out and encouraging him. I can only say one thing, that every time something like this happens, especially when we talk about it, when we make people aware of it, more and more people are red-pilled to the reality that we're not going to be able to vote our way out of the situation. The system is stacked against us. Not just the government, private corporations, private colleges are our enemies. And they are determined to make us minorities on the way to extinction. And they're going to do that by taking away our identity and our heritage and our history and making us into just consuming units.
I agree with that too. And the white genocide is done by different facets and different regions and different measures depending on where you're at. Like the same genocide that's happening in like South Africa is completely different than the genocide that's happening in Europe, you know, and it's exactly a different genocide. I mean, it has the same final solution for us at the end of the road. But what I always try to tell people, and especially when people really are asking questions about like the white genocide question, which has obviously been way more asked than the Jew question, and even though they're completely related and the machinations are completely exactly intertwined and the same purpose and result and all that. But I try to point out, like, whatever happening is here is not always what the, you know, method of operation is over there. And it's not on just one front here. It's on every front, from media to news, your neighbor. I mean, the brainwashing is so deep and entrenched and it completely blasted 24/7 on every outlet completely possible. It's hard to kind of wake people up. And then when you get a gentleman like this Alan Armantrout, you know, I mean, I think he, and like I said, I would have to talk to the gentleman myself. I don't know him. And of course, now I'm getting my information about this gentleman from, you know, various media outlets. From what I heard, he did denounce white, you know, nationalists and nationalism. And like I said, I'd rather hear that from his own mouth. But I couldn't determine myself whether the guy was just, and I don't mean any disrespect, he was either rock stupid or just had brass balls to dress up in a Confederate soldier outfit with a flag. And I will agree with you 100%, Billy. Some skag putting her finger in my face, I don't have that much restraint. I mean, I wouldn't have gone there by myself anyways. I think the guy was alone from what I read, but just the fact that the guy didn't even seem to be wavered by the intense amount of animosity and hatred spewed at him really spoke to me, and it did speak to me in a Confederate type, you know, patriotic type feeling. And yeah, I'm originally from Texas. I've lived in Wisconsin for about 20 years. And unless you're raised in the South, you don't, a lot of, like, I talked to a lot of comrades here, like, you know, LGs born and raised in, you know, in Wisconsin. And I don't know, they, a lot of the guys here that are awake and active and whatnot, they respect the Confederacy, obviously, but unless you actually lived down there and were raised in it And you remember like growing up when we did and how it was almost socially acceptable to go around carrying a Confederate flag and stickers and play, you know, Civil War, and you could shout out, you know, South will rise again. That was all completely normal play, and that has all been gone now. That's all been washed away. PCism down South has completely just flushed all that down there. Every time I go back to Texas now, it's like a state I don't even recognize anymore. I don't even recognize it anymore. It's the landscape and the culture is completely gone. It saddens me. I do still get a good sense of my childhood when I go to certain parts of Louisiana and Arkansas where it's been totally large parts of them have been untouched and not too decimated, if you will. But like my home in Texas, it's gone. But a lot of the Northerners here, they do respect the Southern like Confederacy and our heritage, but you just they don't understand it. And for this guy to do what he did, how he did it. I mean, like I said, I'm always tossed between whether, wow, that was really reckless and stupid and what a dumb kid, almost like a parent, like I would my own child. But sure. then part of me is like, damn, that was really impressive. And that guy's got some brass. And so unless I talk to the guy, I really don't know. So I have been trying to reach out to him, but I haven't gotten very far.
And, you know, like you said, I'm not a Southern nationalist. I was raised in Arkansas and my parents, my dad was in the Klan. Both of my grandfathers were in the Klan. And as far as I know, we've been fighting this fight since 1865 with no surrender. And I have ancestors who fought and bled and died for the Confederacy. I can name their names. I've done the genealogy research. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. And it is hard for people who are outside of that heritage to understand it. But you have to understand that we lost the most bloody war that America has ever been involved in. Mm-hmm. With 600,000 direct dead casualties and another 200,000 that died from disease and sickness, more than any other war. And that's not even counting the civilian casualties and the complete destruction of all the southern cities and the southern economy. Then that was followed by a whole generation of radical occupation, treated like we were a defeated military enemy, which we were, by occupational forces of the federal government, where white guys were not even allowed to vote or hold public office and that kind of thing for a generation. So, yeah, there's some bitterness and some resentment, but it also created this warrior culture that we have, which is completely different from anything that people in the West or the North or the Northeast of the U.S. can even comprehend. But we have this strong Southern white guy warrior culture that, like, you grew up with, you know. Now I live in a county that's 97% white, and all the adjoining counties are over 95% white. We're here for a reason. Because people still very much have that pride and that heritage. But the point you made a minute ago was brilliant, very brilliant, and I want to just touch on it again. Our enemies, the Jews, use whatever tools, whatever weapons they have at hand. And in Europe, they use the Muslims. They use forcing, you know, traitors like Merkel to have open borders across the European Union, and they use Muslims as the non-white immigrant force to destroy the white nations of Europe. The kickback on that is that, of course, Muslims hate Jews as much or more than we do, so they are now fleeing Europe back to Israel, making Aliyah, because they've made Europe untenable for them. It's like a kiki bird pooping its nest, you know? But in Europe, the Jews use Muslims. Here in the U.S., they use niggers, but they also use Mexicans, you know? So that's the most largest non-white population that's close to immigrate in. Wherever they can. In South Africa, of course, they bring in the black tribes and then they try to decimate the whites there. But wherever they are, wherever they do it, we need to understand why. You know your enemy. It's that group adaptive survival instinct of Jews to camouflage themselves by destroying homogeneity. You know, they found out that when there was a homogeneous society, a society where there's one dominant population, it's a majority, and they were the only minority, then right or wrong, every time a well got poisoned or a kid got kidnapped and raped and sacrificed, they got blamed. And that's what led to those pogroms 109 times. So they figured out really quick, and it kind of got inbred literally into them, that if they could always push for open borders and counterculture and bring in other minorities, then they would never be singled out again as the only minority in an otherwise homogeneous majority nation. And they were safer in a multiracial nation where they were not the only minority. So that's why they always support immigration and open borders and homosexuality and feminism and everything else that destroys tradition and traditional values and traditional culture and heritage and destroys homogeneity, because that gives them camouflage to to not be singled out ever again as the only minority. So that's why Jews work like a parasite to keep from 110 times happening, you know. So that's their psychology. And Dr. Kevin McDonald wrote really well about it in The Culture of Critique. I really like that book and recommend it if you want to understand Jewish psychology and why they do what they do. But ultimately, what it gets down to, you know, like any other parasite, if I happen to be out in the woods here and get a tick on my leg, I'm not going to look at the tick and say for too long, I wonder why he bit me. You know, I'm just going to pull him off and crush him and kill him. And that's how we have to respond to parasites.
Right. As far as like them leaving Europe, they could give two shits. I mean, yeah, it's inconvenient for them to having to leave Europe. I mean, our demise is worth them having to relocate. They're fine with that. I mean, they could always come back later on. They have a backup plan. They always have a backup plan.
The thing that really irritates me and baffles me is the amount of treachery of our own people. And I'm assuming it was probably around the same level throughout history, but you know, with mass media and social networking, I mean, oh man, I just hope some of our people have very good memories because of all the treacherous and anti-white whites and the traitors out there. I mean, those have to be number one to be dealt with, even before the Jew.
Absolutely, man. If you only have one bullet left in your revolver and it's down to bayonet, you always save that last bullet for traitors first, and then you go hand-to-hand with the enemy. Always exactly. Shoot traitors first.
Yeah, that's the one thing that just I cannot wrap my mind around is the amount of just hatred for our own kind. It's just, it's insane. Lanzerboy always says, you know, it feels like we're taking crazy pills, and I feel like I'm on it every time I step out this door.
Yeah, it's heady out there. That also kind of leads into my next question too, like back to the Confederate monuments, which obviously is the current focal point for the Antifa rage and all the lefty Marxism bullshit. Confederate groups down there, like the Sons of Confederate Veterans, are they playing an active role, like in trying to protect these monuments? Or are they just fence sitting and trying to like democratically change public view by begging and pleading not to tear down the statues? And I'm only asking because out of ignorance, because I don't know. I'm not, you know, slinging mud or accusations. But since you're boots on the ground and you definitely have a vein on what's going on, how do you see some of these Confederate organizations, and are they actually putting their money where their mouth is, I guess?
Oh, man, it's a great question, but feel free to sling away. They deserve all the slinging that you can do when it comes to mud and anything else.
I figured as much.
I call them rainbow Confederates. They're completely cucked. I would say 80% of them are. Now, what we do, for example, when we go to these demonstrations to defend the Confederate monument, they'll always say things like, well, that flag's not about race. They were about Confederates. I say, so you'd be cool with, you know, Tyrone dating your daughter? Well, no, then you are racist. You know,
exactly.
So we have to awaken some of them. And basically, to be honest with you, they're just rednecks who are no more red-pilled racially than anybody else. They've got these Southern racist instincts that's right below the surface, and we can tap that into them. The leadership, though, the leadership are completely cucked. And I've given, I don't know how many opportunities for them. I have actually held anti-immigration demonstrations. And I was holding one in Arkansas in a courthouse setting where there was a Confederate statue, and I had Sons of Confederate Veterans to come out and fuss at me for having a rally against illegal immigration because it was in front of that Confederate monument, and I was besmirching the history of the Confederate ancestors. And I stopped and I said, get your ass out of that pickup truck and come over. Anyway, I won't tell you how the conversation was there. Right? But what I explained to his other guys that were a little more rational about it is I said, do you really think that Nathan Bedford Forrest would be standing over there with the El Salvadorans and the Guatemalans and the Mexicans flipping us off and waving Mexican flags rather than standing over here with the Southern white people who are trying to save their jobs and their communities from these illegal immigrants? Really? And so we constantly have to fight against their counter signaling every time. There's sometimes when, you know, like in Hot Springs last weekend, there was a Sons of Confederate Veterans group that said that not any white nationalists or neo-Nazis or white supremacists at their rally. So, okay, fine. So we pulled out of that one, and they got outnumbered about 6-1 by a bunch of NAACP who did not care, marched down the street chanting that there is no master race, punch a Nazi in the face, and they do not get it yet. They still get called Nazis, and they're going to put us all in the same mass grave if they win, regardless of how much they cut to them. They're worshiping their obsolete farm machinery. They don't get it. Now, we do pick off about 10 to 15 to 20% of them that actually do get radicalized and come to us with their hat in their hands. And we take them in and we say, pat them on the heads, and we told you so. Now you're ready to fight the real fight, you know. But most of them, you know, they're just taking a break from watching football and drinking beer. That's all they're doing.
And you know, and that really, and I got mixed emotions on both sides of that coin. Okay. Like, I get really pissed off because, unlike your Mom America, Constitution, Zog flag waving pussies, I don't give two shits about them guys. I really don't.
Yeah.
They're so far gone. They worship their nigger athletes and all this shit. I don't really care. Those guys are your typical fence sitting, just sellouts. They would literally sell off their own child. So, but then you got this, you know, these Confederate groups like the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and come from a Southern culture. They've been raised to naturally feel nature's laws and be separatist, and there's differences in races. That's been cultured in us since day one. And now, you know, we're 2017, and that's all being, you know, drawn out of them, if you will, by the Jew. And now they're like all, like you said, hat in hand, like, pisses me off more than the Zog wave flagging jerk offs, because these guys are basically our brethren, you know, and they're supposed to obviously represent and protect said monument and statues, and it sounds like they're doing a real shitty job doing that. And then on top of that, they're filled with white guilt and pushing white guilt down our agenda. And then they step aside and it's like, oh, well, even though this history, our history has always been racial, we're no longer racial. Well, fuck you. I mean, that's, it says you, these groups that are supposed to be bearing, you know, the statues for us and protecting our culture are failing and cucking out. And that even makes me more upset than your, like I said, your everyday flag waving jerk off.
What I find, though, like any other population group, maybe a little bit easier than most population groups, because, like you said, they do have those instincts that they've just been browbeaten into denying, that they're still healthy under the surface. But I find that when I or another Showall Network member, like we had, you know, three different demonstrations, so I couldn't be teleporting from one to the other automatically. When anyone actually stands up and says, yes, we're not just defending this piece of marble, we're not just defending this cannon or that flag. That flag is a symbol of our heritage and the heritage of our people, not just any people that happens to occupy this geographic area, but our ancestors and our descendants. And that people is whites, you know, people who founded this nation and founded the Confederacy as well, same stock, European Americans. So they're trying to attack the symbol, because when you attack a symbol, when you take away a people's heritage and their history and their identity, that's a way to commit genocide against them and to make them extinct. None of them have ever gotten in my face and argued with me about it because they know it's true.
Right.
They just need someone to be willing to say what they are not, what they're probably thinking if they could articulate it, but they need someone to be willing to say what they're thinking. And, you know, that's like you guys do with your show every week. You say what millions of Americans are thinking but don't have the guts or the eloquence to state the way that you do. But through your show and through everything that we do in our movement, we encourage them, and we, through that radical flank effect, make room for them to repeat what we say in a slightly more modulated way. But absolutely, our job then is to speak for those who don't have a voice or who've been intimidated or frightened. And we've got to recognize most people, even our people, you know, I don't believe in equality within the races or between them. Most people are sheep. Most people are not natural leaders. They don't have the balls, frankly, the courage that we do. And that's fine because, you know, Lord help us if everybody was a leader and no one was a follower. But knowing that most people are sheep and we're not, we have a responsibility then to be shepherds. And if we're more like wolves, then let's be sheepdogs, right, to lead those sheep in the right direction, to speak for them, to make sure that they don't hurt themselves and hurt others at the same time. Because I don't believe in democracy. I don't believe we're going to vote our way out of this mess. We're going to have to lead people, sometimes drag them, kicking and screaming, into the future.
I totally agree with that. We've talked about that in lengths on the show as well. And You know, we've also brought up the failures of the alt-right. The alt-right's failures, you know, have now become all of our sins, but none of their victories are our victories. So,
That's a good way of putting it. Very good.
So I don't know how that's gonna. I don't know how it's gonna pan out. And I was listening to Harold Covington's show today, and he was actually talking about that too. And he was like, "Yes, as much as I rag on Richard Spencer, you know, it was impressive that he did get these numbers out." And I do agree with that. It's impressive that he did get those numbers out. And I also think it's pretty impressive, and I wish we could tap into some of the more youth elements that he seems to get a hold of. And we've actually done past shows where we've had people who are, I'm not kidding, like right out of high school, like a year out of high school, they've already dumped the alt-right, and now they're looking more into like NS circles. I know that's very rare. That doesn't happen, like probably 1 out of 100 out of these kids. You know, our point of view on the show is we don't want to bend the knee to the alt-right because, like I said, their victories are not our victories, and we're expected to accept all the degeneracy that they, whether you like it or not, do promote to a certain extent. I mean, but you don't denounce Jewry. You don't denounce faggotry. Those are foundational points for people who respect and are living in NS circles like me and LG here. So for us, that was a darn startup for us. I knew something in Charlottesville was going to happen. I didn't know it was going to be this blowback, but nobody can be sitting there thinking that this wasn't all premeditated. They had a game plan. You know, they had a book. And then when this happened, they opened up the book and they said, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this. You know, I know you've had your trials and tribulations. But like you said, some people are going to drop out. Some are going to march on. And I think out of that, even with the people who drop out, I think it's going to spawn more people. And I think that some of the people that we actually see like an insurgence of is people giving up on the alt-right and looking for different answers. Those answers might be with Covington. Those answers might be in other white nationalist circles. Who knows? But there's always going to be an answer available somewhere, somehow, even in the darkest corner of the web, that's going to be a more viable answer than what the alt-right is serving up right now. And I think that's the biggest draw away from Charlottesville and the whole alt-right debaclement.
Also, real quick, Mr. Roper, I think you were absolutely dead on when you were describing the frontline soldiers at Charlottesville, their bravery and stuff like that. I agreed 100%, and I'm not even going to say much more on that because I don't think I could even come close to saying as good as you did. The thing that really bothered me about that, I don't know if them guys got bad intel or what, but the part of that that really troubles me is engaging the street scum on the lowest level. Those people are the lowest of the low. There's not really any real change coming from that. I would love those frontline soldiers, you know, them guys were, you know, they're fighters, but why can't we direct that energy and action, you know, kind of towards the funny little men in expensive suits? Cause that's where they're going to get hurt.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, from my perspective, I used to be a history teacher a long time ago in a former life, and so I like to try to form a historical cyclical example to go along with the analogy. Think about 1770 in Boston. You know, the Sons of Liberty were looking for optics. They're looking for a way to get people upset. Now, what percentage of people? 3% of the people in 1775 in the United States wanted independence from Great Britain. 3%. Mm-hmm. They won. They won because they had foreign help. That's always been the clincher. In 1861, they did not have foreign help, so they lost. That's always the key. We can talk about that later. But in 1770 in Boston, you see, you have this Boston Massacre, which is basically another piece of political theater. The Sons of Liberty had factions like every other political movement. Infighting's nothing new. Mensheviks versus Bolsheviks, Free Corps versus NSDAP versus Brown Shirts, you know, all the time. So some of the Sons of Liberty said, you know, let's get these committees of correspondence going. Let's not engage the Boston Redcoats directly in the streets. Some of them said, well, screw that. And so they went and got some snowballs and they packed some rocks into them. They started pelting some of the British regulars on the street corner with them. Now, some of the Sons of Liberty who were not there said, the people that you got working with you are not really down with the cause. They're not really wanting independence. They're just wanting to beat up on some soldiers. And, man, have you noticed that Crispus Attucks guy? He's kind of dusky. You know he's, you know, half black, right? So there are purity spirals back then, like me, that said that, you know, what you're doing is corrupt. and you're taking the independence movement in the wrong direction, and yep. you shouldn't be trying to just get people. So I would not have been at the Boston Massacre because I would have been one of the guys saying, Christmas Addicts is not one of us, and you shouldn't be working with those dock workers who are not even white, they're runaway slaves and whatever, right? So I wouldn't have been there. But what happened was, it happened. They threw the snowballs with the rocks. The British soldiers panicked and shot, and someone went down. But guys in the Sons of Liberty who were not even there were able to use that. One of them, most especially being Paul Revere, who was a silversmith, used that Boston Massacre as a propaganda ploy to build up anger against the British, made it like it was just, you know, poor, innocent Boston citizens being attacked for no reason, you know, by the British regulars. So the Sons of Liberty then used the Boston Massacre as a political propaganda piece. So that's kind of like just to remind people that it's always been this way. This is nothing new, right? Mm-hmm. This is the way things happen. And so we're probably about 5 years away from what happened then in 1775, 1776. That being said, I would have been one of those purity stylers saying this is not the way to do things, but then once it happened, said, okay, let's run with it. Let's do the best we can. Same with Charlottesville. I was opposed to it. I think that it could have done a heck of a lot better and could have been planned a lot better. I won't go into that, but I will say that now that it's done, we need to run with it, make the best of it that we can. And if that means that people are radicalized, people that, you know, the wheat is separated from the chaff, the men are separated from the boys, and the scared little hobbyists take the toys and go home to the bomb's basement, that's fine. The real serious men will stand up now and join us because they see that America's going to the edge. It's really close now. The polarization is reaching balkanization levels, and it's not going to be too long before everyone's going to have a side. Either they choose it, or it'll be chosen for them.
Exactly.
Yep. I agree with that.
And I think the next move for the alt-right, if there is a next move for the alt-right, is that you need to reorganize and go back to basics, or you got to push even harder than you did in Charlottesville. And I go with the latter. I think they should ramp it up, but I don't know if they're even capable of doing that. The blowback was so – you got to remember, most of the guys in this that blowout wasn't anyone who is really versed or has been around to see some of the darker times like we have. And so they're in shock and awe. And so, like I said, they can either go back to basics and reorganize, or if they can come back even louder, harder and faster and regroup and do it, I think that would be their best move. I mean, I'm not a military strategist, but they're only left with a couple of choices. And I really think they should just do it all over again and then do it again and then again and again. And I've often will tweet out to Richard Spencer. And I'm sure, like I said, he doesn't read any of my tweets. Why would he? But my suggestion.
He blocked me for some reason. I don't understand why. It hurt my feelings.
He did? He blocked you?
Yeah, it hurt me bad.
That's great.
No, he hasn't blocked me yet. I guess I haven't pissed him off enough. I always ask him on a weekly basis if he's going to denounce Jewry and faggotry, and I never get a response.
And yeah, I never said a word to him. I never tweeted anything to him, but he just blocked me.
Oh, wow. I think maybe perhaps your like reputation precedes you or something, Billy. I don't know. That's funny.
Hurt me bad.
That's hilarious. Anyway, I have tweeted out to him a couple times, and I think the only thing I did, like I said on the last cast, I think they should have their next function on private property, and then whatever happens, happens. That would be my only suggestion.
Yeah, and what we often realize is that the left is going to do what they do. Like in Seattle last weekend, they rioted and looted, and there weren't even any of us there. No. And tomorrow, crazy thing in San Francisco, where this Patriots prayer rally has apparently canceled what they were going to have as a rally, and some of their guys have been arrested. But there's still going to be, it's California. So, you know, there's going to be a transsexual Trump supporter holding a pro-Trump rally in Berkeley. That's what they're calling the conservative side. And then Antifa are going to be attacking her or she or him or it or whatever that is in their thing. So that's going to be some craziness out there in the Bay Area tomorrow. But the big deal to watch for tomorrow is going to be in Knoxville. There's going to be a group. I know these guys personally. They're stand-up guys who are going to be defending the Confederate monuments in Knoxville, Tennessee. And there's a lot of left coming out against them. It could be news. So watch Knoxville tomorrow.
I'll definitely do that. I think we need to wrap it up because Ven keeps a strict timetable. So I wanted to thank Mr. Billy Roper for stopping in Racing Nation today. Thank you so much, sir, for making time to stopping by and chatting with us. I hope you enjoyed your conversation, and I hope you come back again sometime.
It was an honor and a privilege, and heck, I would be happy to talk to you guys anytime, whether it's been recorded or not. So definitely, anytime you want to have me back, just let me know.
Please say hi to your lovely wife for me, and I wish everyone in the Roper clan nothing but the best. Watch your guys' butts. Everyone in the Racing Nation family, I want to say hell victory.
Copy that, comrades. The time has come to lock and load. The age of words and ballots are at an end for the white man. Democracy is a cancer on our hearts and mind and must be cut out. Once again, we need to listen to our blood and the voices of our ancestors in that blood. Kinsmen, now is the time to rediscover our killing spirit, embrace it, and make proud once more our fathers before us. Defeat never, victory forever.
Hail victory, brothers.
Hail victory.
A judge and a lawyer, hey, legal man, you've got a serial killer on the stand. But if the price is right, you let him walk free today. Well, I can smell bullshit from a mile away. Politician, legislative man, he smiles while he shakes your hand. He promises you the world if you vote for him on election day. Well, I can smell bullshit from a mile away. So don't feed me no crock of shit sales pitch line. You're wasting your breath and you're wasting my time. You don't fool me with that fake fucking smile on your face, 'cause I can smell bullshit from a mile away. Doctor, hey medicine man, there's a lot of sick folks that need a helping hand. But you'll pass them by and let them die if they're too poor to pay. Well, I can smell bullshit from a mile away. Reverend, hey preacher man, you've got the Holy Bible in your hand. Collection plate, if he's into your pocket while you watch your people pray. I can smell bullshit from a mile away. You lie and cheat and steal and feed off greed, you crooked hypocrite. You all pretend to be our friends, but you're all full of shit. I don't trust you and I don't believe a fucking thing you say, 'cause I can smell bullshit from a mile away. I can smell bullshit from a mile away.
This podcast is a general discussion of certain aspects of human and political dynamics. It does not advocate, urge, or incite any individual or group to commit unlawful acts of violence against anyone.
Fuck America, I'm done.